From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Randall Lane, business writer for Forbes magazine, has just published a lengthy article entitled Greater Capitalism: How the Pandemic is Permanently Reshaping Our Economic System for the Better. In it, Lane laments the fact that too many Americans worry the economy is rigged to benefit the rich, but points out that during the pandemic, some glimmers of hope in salvaging capitalism lie in the fact that several publicly traded companies were shamed into returning their taxpayer-backed loans. He also lauds the philanthropic efforts of billionaires and claims that the invisible hand is operating on itself with dispatch. What exactly does pandemic-era capitalism in the U.S. look like? To help answer that question, we turn to Richard Wolff, visiting professor at the New School University in New York, professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst. He's the author of a number of books, including Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism, Imagine Living in a Socialist USA, and more. He's also the host of the nationally syndicated program Economic Update, and he wrote a new piece entitled Capitalism versus Safety in Health, an old story again. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Thank you, Sonali. Glad to be here.
So it seems as though many people are writing these sorts of stories these days when the ills of capitalism seem more apparent than ever, as this pandemic shows just how little corporations and capitalism care for American workers. And it seems as though that's what's prompting writers like Lane to try to salvage the reputation of this economic system. What do you make of his attempts to justify or, you know, somehow claim that the pandemic is actually making capitalism stronger and better for everybody?
I think he's a cheerleader for a sinking ship. I take it very seriously and interesting that he wants desperately to find something that he can hang his hat on, and the hat being that somehow something positive or good or beneficial will come out of all of this. I see it as his recognition, somewhat upside down, of how grim and terrible for capitalism all of this is. Let's be really clear. We are in a depression. We are in a depression that is only comparable to the greatest depression of capitalism in the 1930s. We were told after that lessons had been learned, so we would never again be in such a situation. That wasn't true. Every president since Roosevelt has promised that we would not bequeath to our children these kinds of crashes, and here we are in another terrible one. So I think for him, the job is very, very difficult. I notice not only the things he says, and he lauds the invisible hand. I find this stunning. We have never had a greater display of the visible hand of government keeping this system afloat, barely, than we see today. Whatever the invisible hand is doing, it doesn't seem to be making much of a positive difference. And I also notice absences in his article, things he does not want to deal with, the way, for example, a German capitalism has handled this virus in a completely different way, just to illustrate what he doesn't talk about. In Germany, 9 weeks ago when all of this began, unemployment was 5%. Today, it is 6%. Okay, in the United States, unemployment at 9 weeks ago was 4%, and it's currently, depending on how you count, 17 to 20%. It's quadrupled here. Germany lost 200,000 jobs. The United States lost 35 million. There is no comparison. In Germany, basically nobody was fired. There is no unemployment increase. Everybody was kept on their job. Everybody was guaranteed their job. And everybody was paid 70, 80% of their normal pay. That's a different way of getting through a crisis of a virus than was chosen here. He doesn't even recognize that. He doesn't deal with it. He doesn't talk about what it implies. And I should just underscore, it's a terrible testimony to the failure in this country to have the kinds of socialist, communist, and labor union movements that make Germany react so differently. And so, yes, he does notice that the polls show an increasing interest in socialism, but he does not recognize that this is an interest of a population that has not yet figured out how to make it happen.
One of the things that he points out, rightly so, is that the virus has exposed larger fissures afflicting this country as communities of color have suffered disproportionate death, sickness, and joblessness. He, of course, doesn't say anything about why those issues exist, nor about, you know, our terribly discriminatory healthcare system or lack thereof. But then he goes on to point out that the richest self-made African-American, Robert Smith, is focusing on creating opportunities for young Black Americans by helping to wipe out their college debt. I thought this was remarkable because a lot of proponents of the current system of capitalism do love to point out the philanthropy that billionaires are engaged in, as if that's somehow a justification for how much wealth they've accrued. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I, being a professor myself, I find all of this unspeakably offensive. That Mr. Smith decided in some explosion of good feeling to tell the students at Morehouse College that he would take over for one class in one period their college debts doesn't begin to deal with the terrible reality of debt for the vast majority of American young people that have become the first generation to go into adult life with an overhang of horrible debt, the kind of debt that prevents you from getting married, having children, moving, doing the things you love to do in life, a terrible social burden. None of that is faced up to, and we're supposed to get all teary-eyed that one group of graduating seniors in one college, small one at that, had their debts erased. It really is extraordinary. It's the refusal to see a social problem because you prefer to look at an individual act. Secondly, why do we make the college, which is something that is going to help the whole society, having an educated group of younger people, why do we want to make that dependent on the whims of billionaires? If they decide this year to help education, oh goody, next year they'll help modern dance. The year after that, they'll be interested in palm trees and planting them. I mean, we are now allowing what should be social decisions about social development become instead play toys for literally a handful of people who have an enormous amount of wealth. It is a sad commentary on where things are, especially here in the United States.
He also points out how some corporate CEOs have chosen to treat their workers a little bit better than others, you know, such as providing hazard pay, etc. But of course, the vast majority of American workers, especially during this pandemic, have had to fight tooth and nail for the crumbs of, you know, extras that they might have gotten, you know, something like maybe $2 an hour extra per pay if they were lucky, which now is already being taken away from them. But it's really remarkable that he also, in addition to, you know, failing to cite German capitalism, like you said, he fails to cite the fact that the workers' demands, workers' threats of walkouts and other, you know, exercises of labor power have had far more success, that's relative success, at gaining anything positive during this pandemic than corporate CEOs' benevolence.
Yes, and let me remind, although it's a bit embarrassing for them, let me remind the Forbes magazine people of a basic economics lesson. If you suddenly plunge 38, and that's the official number from the Washington Post, 38.6 million people into unemployment over the last 8 weeks, here's what the reality of economics is. Every employer knows that he or she can now say to their workers, I'm going to cut your salary. I'm going to take away your benefits. I'm going to make you work harder. I'm going to spend less on the health and safety of the workplace. And if you don't like it, let me remind you, there are 38.6 million other people who are unemployed, who are worried that they will not have a job when the unemployment is over because their employer's gone. They're worried that they're using up what little savings they had. They're worried that their unemployment might be taken away if they refuse to go back to an unsafe workplace. And so they're desperate and becoming more so each day, allowing every employer to play off the unemployed against the employed. Maybe the employed think they're immune. They're not. That's not how capitalism works. Those unemployed stand as a constant threat to the worsening of the conditions of labor. And to imagine that employers will not take advantage of it is not going to be whisked away by some stories of individual employers who will learn soon enough that if they're nice people and they don't screw their workers, their competitors aren't, and they will have to follow suit because that's how capitalism works.
One of the things that jumped out at me, sort of indicators for how shameless our obscene wealth divide is, was a tweet that Bloomberg put up on May 25th. It was a link to an article. The article was entitled "Quandary for High Flyers: How to Travel Safely to Your Yacht." It's a modern quandary for the ultra wealthy. A yacht awaits at harbor, but how to safely reach it without exposure to the germ-ridden masses. Richard, I kid you not, it literally said germ-ridden masses. I thought at first that this was maybe a tongue-in-cheek, maybe this was The Onion, this was some sort of satire, but it was an actual tweet about an actual article about how the today's modern ultra-wealthy folks are suffering because they have to travel through the germ-ridden masses to get to the safety of their yachts. And then they wonder why Americans are more and more drawn to socialism.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. It's also a sign, and I'm very glad you brought this to my attention. It's also a sign of the level of out of connection, out of touch, that these people at the top politicians, the CEOs, where they are. I mean, look at this situation. 38 million people unemployed. I don't mean to harp on the German example. Other European countries have also done what the Germans have done, but that there's no national debate about why did we respond to a pandemic by throwing people out of work? What in the world are you doing? Other countries don't do this. Why are you doing it? That the Democratic Party, the ostensible opposition, allows this without a murmur that there ought to be an alternative. It's a little bit like watching that moment when Mr. Trump ordered the workers at the pork processing factory in the Midwest back to work, but did not order the employers of that factory to make it safe. As though the dictation has to be to the workers, but nothing is required of the employer. In Europe, for the employer to get bailout money, the commitment had to be no one gets fired. That's not a maybe. That's what would be considered the minimum reasonable, fair way to deal with it. That it can pass unchallenged in the United States tells you something about the disconnection between the people at the top and the mass of the people who have to suffer a government of these two parties so out of touch.
I want to talk about the piece that you wrote recently, Capitalism versus Safety and Health, an old story again. We have been told now by Trump, by Republicans, by those who are, very, very upset that such mass unemployment is going to jeopardize Trump's re-election. They want the nation to get back to work again, as if the only choice is between mass layoffs or risking one's safety and risking a second wave of infections by going back to normal. But this, you say, is an old story. Why?
Well, it's basically this. Capitalists are in the business of making money, making profit. That's what they go to business school. That's what they get an MBA for doing. The job of the capitalist is to invest X dollars and pull out X plus Y dollars more at the end. And the difference is the profit, and that's what he or she is in business for. Okay, so you buy inputs, machines, equipment, raw materials, and you hire workers. And you hope that you can sell the product of this enterprise for more than the costs of those inputs. You do not want to, quote unquote, waste money on anything else. The bare minimum machinery you need, the bare minimum raw materials to work up, and the bare minimum of workers that you need to hire. Spending money on making the workers comfortable, safe, healthy, has always been an area that capitalists don't spend money on. They don't like to. They don't want to. It's a distraction from and a detraction from the profits they can earn. Only when the level of noise, dirt, or illness is so severe as to threaten profits, will they pay some attention. That's why we have in the United States, throughout our history, endless efforts of both working people and some governments to impose on capitalists the requirement for a safe and healthy workplace, because without the government passing OSHA, for example, the Occupational Safety and Health Administrations, and earlier Food and Drug Administration, meat processing, I mean, all of the industries that have been unsafe, and believe me, it's every single one of them, have had to have government legislation, local, state, and national, to do something. In that way, to do something to make them safe and healthy, to make capitalists spend on them. And in that way, the pandemic is nothing new. What is being done as we speak today is forcing or trying to force workers back into workplaces, job sites that have not been made adequately safe. We haven't reconfigured them for social distancing. We haven't developed mechanisms of cleaning and disinfecting. We haven't even done the testing that might allow us to have a standard that only people who haven't got the illness can go to work in this place. People who have the illness without symptoms, well, they can work over here, because if they're separated out, then they're not a danger to the rest of the population and they can work in that environment. We can handle these problems, but it costs money to do so. And the private sector doesn't want to spend it, and they don't want the government to impose it on them. And so we have a president who says to the workers, go back to work, threatens them, as he did, that if they are offered their job back and they refuse, they can then be denied perhaps their unemployment benefit. This is very close to what in other countries is called slave labor. You force workers back to work because the alternative is to plunge them into poverty. And in this case, you're telling the working class, you must go back to work, even if it threatens your health and through you, the people closest to you in your home, your family, and so on, whom you may infect. It is a stunning failure of capitalism to handle this problem in a way that is not at the expense of the working class, which is, in this claimed democracy, the majority of the people.
You point out in your piece, and a lot of people have pointed this out, there was a time, of course, in this country when child labor was legal, and some of the same arguments. I mean, it seems impossible that this was actually a part of the national discourse, but some of the same sorts of arguments were being made that, you know, sure, it might seem unfair, but it's so important to the economy. It's in the best interest of the families to allow children to work, etc. But I mean, it is part of the same spectrum of logic that if it's not ethically right and morally right to allow children to work, to have child labor, then why is it morally or ethically right to force workers back into an environment where they could catch a very infectious disease, die from it, and pass it on to many others before they die from it? So this just seems to be a logic that people aren't willing to see or willing to raise, right?
Yes, and I think there's another dimension that's worth pointing out. When Mr. Trump and others like him in both parties talk about a phrase like reopening the economy, or talk about helping people who need their jobs back, who need the income, this way of recasting the forcing of people back to work as if you're doing them a favor. This was exactly the argument used by the same employer class around child labor. There used to be articles in the newspaper highlighting how these three children working in some godforsaken sweatshop were bringing home a pittance, but how valuable that pittance was to the poor family of which they were the children. In other words, the child labor was a gift to the poor. You were doing the poor a favor, helping them. I mean, the ability to invent articles like this, to publish them, to repeat these arguments, to be unwilling to face what it is you are doing. Look, in the end, and this is a happy ending, in the end, the mass of the American working class said, enough. There will be no child labor. We don't care if you're going to have to find your profits some other way, Mr. Employer. You're not going to take our children as young as 5 years of age, deprive them of an education, deprive them of a childhood, subject them to sexual, emotional, and physical abuses that are legendary. We're not going to have it. And that was the end of it. And capitalists had to go other ways, develop technology, go abroad, come up with new mechanisms, but they couldn't have children. And it would be hopeful that the lesson learned by the working class today is you are not going to put us back in workplaces that you haven't spent the money to make safe. How dare you? That's not an option any more than employing our children has become.
And it's remarkable that today, one of the big stories in the media is how some people who are claiming jobless benefits because they were laid off are making more money, $600 a week extra, making more than they would be making if they were to return back to work. And this was a big contention, a point of contention between Republicans and Democrats as they were getting ready to pass the CARES Act, that some Republicans objected so greatly to the fact that some Americans who are so poorly paid that unemployment benefits might be a little bit more lucrative than their pittance of a salary, how that was somehow unfair. But that's a talking point instead of an indication of the failure of capitalism in America.
Yeah, and let's remember, an unemployed person is subject to a great deal of pressure. It is an awful thing to have thrown 38.6 million people out of work. Let me just run through a couple of them. Millions of the small and medium businesses, and some big ones, are going to die. They are not going to reopen. They are done. Think of all the restaurants that can't possibly survive these months of being unable to function. And look at the enterprises. I just recently read a report on the bankruptcy of Hertz Rent-A-Car. Big corporations are dying as well.
Boeing has announced it's laying off tens of thousands of workers as well.
Exactly. And that means that many, many of these unemployed people understand that there is no job for them when this is over. When the unemployment is over, that's when they are going to be in even greater difficulty because the jobs aren't there. There's no guarantee that you get your job back. And even if you do have that job there's nothing at this point, nothing to prevent the employer from changing the conditions of your job, including what you do, how much you get paid, the circumstances under which you work. The unemployed people now are facing a level of uncertainty, not only about the disease and how it could destroy their lives, but how this end of whatever this unemployed period is, what it will mean for them, what the employer can and likely will do to the work conditions that they face. So of course you ought to give them $600 more because they are suffering more. They are going to carry the absurd way in which this pandemic has been handled, giving vast amounts of money to people at the top, Boeing aircraft, having proven its record of being unwilling to pay for safety and health of the people in its airplanes, is getting billions, but you're begrudging the people subject to unemployment to their $600. Only a politician, Republican or Democrat, utterly out of connection with the life most of us lead, could think and talk in this way. It's really a kind of emblem which you have caught again in that Forbes magazine article.
Richard, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article about capitalism from our website and as well your personal website. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali. I appreciate your program.
My guest has been Richard Wolff. He's a visiting professor at the New School University in New York and a professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst. He's written a number of books. He's also the host of the nationally syndicated program Economic Update, and his latest story is entitled Capitalism versus Safety, Health, An Old Story Again. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.